right, so closing the show down, we've got Chairman and CEO of GE, Jeff Mills. Thanks.
Great, Nigel. Good morning. We'll dig right in. See you, David.
I'm late.
Okay, Dave, thanks for your help. That's really... How's your business in China, by the way? So with no further ado, let's get right to it here. So, look, like around the world, I would say headlines for us, business is good, orders strong, service revenue good. Lots of cash on hand to buffer any volatility, and so I'd say, you know, kind of headlines is we're pretty, you know, pretty optimistic about what we're seeing in our business day and how it looks going forward. Quick on the framework, this is the industrial stuff. You know, we still see industrial earnings growth for the year to be solidly positive. Transportation and healthcare remain very strong for us. Aviation is trending more positive, mainly driven by service earnings in aviation. In energy, I think we think will probably be more flat for the year, really. Margins in wind, but the orders and the leading indicators in energy are actually quite positive. So industrial looks like it's going to be up for the year, and we feel pretty good about our positioning there. Meanwhile, capital remains very strong. You know, earnings positive. Most of the signs we're looking at, losses, things like that, are quite good in GE Capital. Corporate about on expectations. Cash between $12 and $13 billion. And industrial organic revenue growth up 5%. So I would say our 2011 framework is trending positive. And we see, when we look at incoming orders and things like that, nothing to derail that on a global basis, and so that's I'd say, and we think we're very well positioned for 2012 and beyond. These are kind of the six metrics that we showed you at the end of the year that we've been working on. I think we're well on track for all these: earnings growth above S&P 500, good balance earnings, good cash, and so we see in 2011 pretty good execution and consistent with this model and framework that we've showed you before. Just very quick update on strategy. You know, I think we like the portfolio infrastructure and financial services. I think it's the best, most competitive portfolio that the company's had, at least in 10 years, and lots of competitive advantage. I think lots of opportunity for tailwind when I look at the portfolio today. And I think pretty stable. We just don't see a lot of macro changes in the portfolio in the short term. Same six strategic imperatives on growth that we've been executing in some way, shape, or form for the last 5 or 10 years, and big operating parameters as it pertains to capital allocation, people development, driving margins and returns. So I would say both portfolio and our initiatives are really in pretty good shape, and we think can execute in the environment we're in today as we look forward. I'll just give a couple quick strategic updates on the company. You know, the first one is in R&D. You know, we see overall R&D for the company between 5 and 6% of revenues. I'd make a couple comments. You know, the first one is I don't see us increasing NPI or R&D as a percentage of revenue. I think we're at a good state for us. So I think point number one I'd make is this won't increase as a percentage of revenue going forward, but I like where we are. 30% more products coming through the pipeline, directed at gaining share, growing contribution margins, or expanding our market presence. And the tail of the tape is our organic industrial orders growth should be between 5 and 10% in 2011. So that's the payback, ultimately, is above market growth, and we think our technology gives us a chance to do that. Services are very strong. Services are kind of generating, you know, double-digit type top-line and bottom-line growth. We see increase in the installed base,
We see increase in revenue per installed base. We've seen increases in parts revenue. We've seen increases in CSA backlog. Our growth in the emerging markets is strong. Our margins in the emerging markets are strong. Our CSAs have good protection on inflation. We get good productivity in our CSAs, and our software revenue is up, you know, growing 15% a year. So a lot to like on the services page. And from a global standpoint, you know, we've grown in the emerging markets, key growth markets, 10% a year for the last decade or so. That's actually accelerated. We think this will be about 15% this year in these great emerging markets. A couple big changes. I think just repositioning our leadership with John Rice going to Hong Kong and lots of other key leaders going with him. I just think we put our decision-making closer to where the markets are, point number one. I think point number two, big investments in capability vis-a-vis innovation, engineering, manufacturing in these regions. And point number three, more partnerships, which we think expand our market presence and our penetration. So we like the way our business is trending in the key global markets. A couple examples of the partnerships. The stuff on the top half of the page really allow us to expand our presence in the country. So a joint venture in China with Huadian, which are going to allow us to sell more gas turbines in China. Couple big joint ventures in healthcare and energy in Russia, which are going to expand our market presence. In the bottom half of the page, a joint venture with AVIC, which is going to really expand our technology presence in the cockpit, and a joint venture with a company called Triveni, which is going to give us super low-cost steam turbine capability out of India. So that's going to be a product we can sell not just in India but around the world. Yeah, our global presence is really good. I think the points I would make on this page is the diversity of the GE footprint is very strong. We're getting good growth across all these regions, and it's in the businesses where we have our sweet spot. I mean, we're getting good growth in infrastructure, energy, healthcare. So we've got just a broad, diversified emerging market footprint where we play with competitive advantage. And I could give you good stories about Brazil, China, really across the board. So we see good technology pipeline strategically. We see good services. And we're seeing a global operation that really is working extremely well. Lastly, you know, we've got a program called GE Advantage going on inside the company. We're really focused on 40 key processes inside GE, which we think have the highest leverage on margin enhancement and working capital turns. You know, we think this is going to really lead us to some good progress as time goes on, using, you know, the tools that we've used for a long time, Lean Six Sigma tools like that. Examples just to get more efficiency out of our NPI, get more bang for the buck there, cycle reduction in order to remittance, margin enhancement on our supply chain, making sure that our acquisitions are effective and have teams of people working on that. And then just working on the value gap, how we price with our customers, how we're doing deflation. So, you know, this is going to be, you know, a lot of the fuel that helps us grow margins next year. And continue to improve working capital turns is on this page. So that's really just a brief strategic update. What I thought I'd do this year, unlike past years, is just go through what's on your mind. Really, you know, reading the sell-side notes, talking to a lot of investors, just really do a deep dive on the things I hear you talking about that are concerns or opportunities for the company, and just do a deep dive on them. So you might pick more than this, but these were the six that I picked as the most frequently asked questions. You know, the first thing I'd say is, look, when I look at 10, 11, 12, 13, we see very solid earnings growth for the company during that time period. And then, you know, here are the things that I hear investors talking about, you know, most frequently: margin rates, acquisitions, energy cycle, aviation cycle, GE capital, and capital allocation. So I'm going to do a little bit of a deep dive on each one of these and just kind of talk you through it. Margin rates, you know, I think good historic margin rates inside the company. You know, we think the margin rates will be down slightly this year. And then in 2012, our expectation is the margin rates start growing again, you know, consistent with our long-term performance. There's four big drivers. The first one is just value gap and productivity. That was headwind this year, mainly driven by pricing in the wind. Backlog was the big driver. We see that getting better as we go into 2012, or at least reaching a run rate. And meanwhile, we have good volume and good productivity programs. So when I look at the value gap for 12 and good deflation programs. We see that going from being negative this year to being no worse than flat as we look at 2000 and 2012. R&D and NPI pipeline, as I already talked about, I think we, you know, we've kind of achieved our threshold from an R&D standpoint, so that's going to improve next year. Some of the inefficiencies of the new engine losses are in the run rate. So this was negative this year. We think that'll be positive on the operating profit rate next year. Third thing is service margins are positive this year. Service margins are going to be positive again next year. And then the last point is just the, you know, as we bring in acquisitions that have lower inherent operating profit rates, it takes us a year or so to do the synergy programs and things like that. So we see that as being a negative this year and going to a positive next year. So when I put it all together, you know, we think we'll get margin expansion going into 2012. So that's point number one. Point number two, you know, we've done a lot of work on the portfolio. You know, we basically wanted to make the company focus on infrastructure where we saw our competitive advantage, so more competitive advantage, less volatile. And within infrastructure, we wanted to make our businesses stronger. We wanted to give them more revenue streams inside a business like energy and aviation than they've had in the past. And if you think about the last 6 or 9 months, you know, we've done a reallocation from NBC to doing energy acquisitions. Basically, NBC going from 80% down to 49% and then generating, you know, doing deals that basically give us $6 billion of relatively fast-growing revenues in the energy space. And two big goals. One was to build out a good oil and gas platform, and the other one was to strengthen some key energy efficiency and energy platforms looking at the future. So oil and gas, you know, we really have, you know, kind of defined a space that is in what I call technical solutions. This is the rotating equipment and the services associated with doing a big energy project, somewhere between 20 and 40% of the content of the project. Our customers are both oil field service people like Halliburton and Schlumberger and also the national and integrated oil companies. And we think this is a really good space. It's got good technical barriers. It's got good service revenues that go with it. With the deals we've done, we've established a leadership position in this area. And we think this is a platform where we've got some competitive advantage that can grow for a long period of time organically that can leverage aviation and other businesses. So this is kind of how we define the space and who we play against. And we think we've established a pretty strong position looking at the future. And then there's a couple energy spaces that drive energy efficiency, that drive process controls, and that are in distributed power, each one of which we've strengthened by doing these deals. Convertim and Lineage really add to our electrification and power controls business. Dresser really added to our process controls capability. And Waukesha really added to our distributed energy space. So these are well-known competitors, big, massive profit pools that are growing, and kind of key GE businesses where we think we can now really compete and participate at scale. So that's how we think about the acquisitions that we've done. Energy is always on people's minds, and this is a question I get asked a lot from all of you. And you know, I've read some of the comments that were made by some of my predecessors who have been here this week. I mean, you know, we see the formation of a natural gas power generation cycle forming. And there's a number of different reasons from inexpensive gas pricing to the need for capacity in emerging markets to questions about the nuclear power industry to, you know, you just go down it. There's just lots of things that are helping to drive it. Natural gas is a inexpensive way to generate power, and it appears to be plentiful. So it seems like this is information right now, and we think this is very important to GE. What I would point out is, unlike, you know, the late 90s, the last time when this formed in the U.S., we've got a much bigger footprint in this space. You know, we now do air to derivatives, distributed power, oil gas technology, LNG, flow monitoring controls. So we can participate in a much broader arena around this trend than we could in the past. And then the last thing I'd say is just, you know, when I was here a year ago, we basically thought that the heavy-duty gas turbine shipments would be flat in 11 and 12. Now we see growth this year. We see growth next year. The primary drive, at least on deliveries, is going to be outside the United States. But, you know, there's going to be increased demand again in the U.S. You know, we think it's going to start sooner than later. You know, we don't know exactly, but it feels like it could be as early as 12. And so, you know, if that plays into this, this gets even better. So I think point number one is it appears like we're entering into a natural gas cycle, and GE is well positioned, probably as well or better positioned than anybody you've had here this week to participate on this trend. And then if you just think about our energy business in general, this kind of gives you a 10-year look back. I mean, this kind of shows you the U.S. power bubble. And I think what investors can take some consolation in is that in this economic cycle, we won't have one negative earnings year in our energy business. In fact, if you look at 06 through 11, the average annual earnings growth in energy will be 10% through a recession and through a U.S. market that has really been dormant for almost a decade. So when I think about, so it's just a much stronger business. You know, it's more global, it's got more diversity, it's got more technical diversity, still has high margins. When I look at 12 and beyond, there's just lots of good drivers for where the company goes. More positive heavy-duty gas turbine cycle, you know, acquisitions playing in, energy service margin expansion, wind, which was extremely negative this year, you know, kind of settles into the run rate and will eventually turn. So we've got lots of things, great global growth to position this. So we really see energy earnings going positive in the second half of this year, and then that accelerates into 2012 and beyond. So, you know, that's kind of the energy story. Point number four is the aviation product cycle. I know you've had a few conversations on the aviation cycle this week. What I try to do is put this into some perspective. You know, if you look over decades, from 1980 to 2020, right? GE has cleaned up in the commercial aviation industry, cleaned up. We had two major platforms launch in the 25 years from 1980 to 2005, fundamentally. Our installed base between, you know, the early 80s and where we sit today has more than doubled as a share of the industry, right? So if you look at our share of the installed base, you know, we ran at a 20-30% market share. We're now substantially over 50% share of the installed base. And then when you look at the investments we're making today, you know, more platforms being launched, but that's already in the run rate, a very healthy GE share position and a very strong product lineup. And look, I'm quite confident of our performance on the GNX and the LeapX on the Airbus 320 re-engine program. So I'm extremely confident as I think about our position over this time horizon. Now, when you think about it financially, we've got great service revenues, great service earnings this year. That's going to continue. We upped our investment as we launched the GNX engine and now the LeapX engine. So we upped the investment. That now has kind of crested. We've got our avionics business growing. And then we've got the launch inefficiencies of kind of shipping new engines into the run rate. So when I think about the aviation business going forward, I'd say very, very, very strong competitive position, pretty good visibility out years in the future, and earnings growth starting in 2011 and accelerating in 2012 and beyond. So I like how this business is positioned. Next point on GE Capital and how GE Capital is positioned. Good earnings growth in GE Capital. Our ending net investment reduction is really on plan. The one way to think about one of the key advantages for GE Capital is we've got origination that the banks don't have, so we're able to continue to grow the asset base of the business at high margins because I do think we've got a front-end advantage, commercial real estate getting better. And then when I think about the fact that we're earning more money on a lower net investment, our capital ratios are going to be quite strong. So we anticipate, you know, kind of having a new regulator. It's still our expectation when you look at the capital ratios and just the number of times, you know, we in many ways have kind of had people looking at, you know, what's it going to mean to be regulated by the Fed and stuff like that. We've thought through it a number of different ways. You know, we still see an opportunity to have a dividend from GE Capital by next year. So again, we have to go work through that process, but we're, you know, we like our position right now in GE Capital, and we think the business is quite well positioned in the in this arena. And then lastly, on capital allocation, I think we did what we said we were going to do over the last year. You know, when I was here a year ago, we said We're going to increase dividends. We did. We said we're going to relaunch the buyback. We have. We said we're going to do industrial deals between $1 and $3 billion. That's what we did. When I think about, you know, the business going forward, really, you know, we should have in excess of $30 billion of cash above and beyond, you know, the things we've committed to as I look at the next 3 years. You know, and the priorities are going to be to have a very good dividend, you know, a payout ratio that's consistent with the history of the company, to continue to do smart and strategic infrastructure deals, and to continue to grow the payback. And we think as we get cash out of GE Capital through dividend, special dividend, that gives us a great avenue to increase the buyback as we think about how the company's positioned and where we are in the cycle. So those are the six things that I hear the most. And again, just to recap, you know, we see a couple pretty good years of earnings. You know, I just wanted to give you a couple thoughts. You know, industrial earnings growth is important to you. It's important to me. It's important to everybody who thinks about GE. This is job one, and we like how we're positioned. We think we've got good organic growth. If we execute well, we're going to grow margins, and we like how our industrial businesses are lining up, number one. Number two, GE Capital is performing. We're executing well. We think GE Capital is going to be a good way to grow earnings and to provide cash for the company over time. Point number three, my huge focus right now is on acquisition integration. We've done some deals. I want to make sure they get integrated well, that the returns are good, and that is much more important to me right now than doing new deals right now. So a real focus on acquisition integration, where we are today, and then just capital flexibility, financial flexibility as we go forward. So that's you know, how we feel about the company and where we're positioned right now. So just a couple things to summarize with. You know, we did the mosaic last year. You know, when I did the mosaic last year, a lot of things on the left-hand side, some turned out to be better. Some, like wind margins, turned out to be true. You know, so that was last year's mosaic. When I look at this year, we just have a lot more tailwinds than headwinds when I think about the company, where we are right now. GE Capital, you know, we're just well-positioned. The market's better. Losses are going to be lower. Commercial real estate's going to be better. We just have a lot of things in GE Capital. And then when I look at all the industrial segments, we, you know, none of them, you know, are perfect, but they all have more tailwinds than headwinds. And it would be my expectation that that these businesses all have positive earnings growth as I look into 2012. And we have to see how the economy goes and stuff like that. But that would be my expectation running the company as we look forward. And then corporate, there just shouldn't be, you know, there shouldn't be any surprises in corporate. You know, the Hudson and stuff like that, that's kind of 2010 activity, and so corporate ought to be somewhat easier to model as we look forward. So that's how I would think about the mosaic. And then this is just the summary page, which is, you know, this year puts and takes, headwinds and tailwinds. GE Capital, you know, pretty good stretch in 11 and 12 for a lot of good reasons. Industrial growth resumes this year and you know, accelerates next year. Still with, you know, we still have a few headwinds, but with more tailwinds as we go into next year. You know, the NPI working, better margins, acquisitions kicking in, pretty good markets. And so we see good earnings growth next year and balanced earnings growth between GE Capital and GE Industrial. So that's the GE story. So let me, Scott, maybe? Okay.
Jeff,
prerogative of the host? Yeah.
You only won. So gas turbine production, I think you had it down initially. You said then that April is flat, and now you're looking for it to grow. So it seems the rate of change in that business is accelerating. Yet you still only have one plus for 2012. So what would it take for you to have two plus for 2012?
You mean in heavy-duty gas turbine unit growth?
Is it just like some caution on global growth, or is it just too early to make that call?
I think it's too early to say. You know, again, I think the you know, Nigel, most of the market activities are positive. You basically go through a cycle to go from interest to order to shipment. Those are heavy-duty gas turbine shipments for this year and next year. We have a great supply chain, and we're already, you know, providing more units in Japan and things like that. So let's see how it goes. And I would say when we look at new quote activity in the gas turbine market, the pricing is getting better as well. So I want to manage.
Siemens is spinning off Osram, as we've all been told, and you know, clearly I know Home and Business Solutions is not a huge priority for you, but does what Siemens is doing change at all how you think about the business, and while we're on that, how do you think about the business?
You know, Scott, as you know, we've been there, done that almost on looking at it. You know, what we've done, Scott, is we put money in the product line. The business ought to get good earnings growth next year, you know, based on that. You got a likelihood, well, I shouldn't say a likelihood. You got a chance of a housing cycle at some point in the future. And I think what we've done is made it better. And you know, we'll see where we go as time goes on. So we'll just see what happens. But in the meantime, I think it ought to be a source of no downside for our investors. And we ought to get some earnings as time goes on out of it. Jeffrey.
Thanks, Jeff. Just two questions. First, on margins looking into next year. With R&D trending down a little bit and volume picking up, it sounds like wind's a little better. What is it that would hold the margins roughly flat as you look into next year?
Look, I think, Jeff, the only thing that would make it flat would just be, you know, a difference in what we see today in equipment versus service mix. You know, that would be the only thing. Because I think, you know, we can see kind of some of the new business margins coming in. We know what the service margins should be. And that would be the only thing that I would see. And then the speed of acquisition, integration, stuff like that.
And then secondly, on LeapX, there's been a little bit of talk that the design isn't totally stabilized, that you guys are adding stages and fan size and things like that. Can you just give us an update on where the engine really is relative to
on the LeapX?
On the LeapX,
yeah. Look, you're going to see between now and the air show, you're going to see some good orders. You know, so I just think... You know, when you're in a heavily competed industries like this, there's always 1,000 stories in the naked city, you know. I think the one thing I'd say to investors is, look, we've launched more engines than the rest of the industry combined over the past 30 years at better margins, and we will launch this one with excellence as well. I'd just rather leave it at that, Jeff, and get into point-counterpoint. Yeah.
All right, Jeff. Thanks. We've heard a lot from companies about emerging market margins this week, and the pressure that those may be under in coming years as competition starts to mature in those markets. So that's the question at a higher level is, what are you seeing on that front? What gives you confidence that you'll be able to outrun that and stay ahead on the margin front relative to emerging market competition?
You know, my view is that, you know, I watch the service margin revenue extremely closely. I watch all of our margins closely. But the service margin revenue, which in many ways creates your earnings stream for a longer period of time, is as good in emerging markets as it is in developed markets. And then I would say if you just look at heavy-duty gas turbines, you know, it's hard to find a substantial margin difference from, you know, region to region. I think what happens is when the cycle goes down like it was in 08, you know, everybody's competing for fewer business, price gets under pressure. When the market gets better like it does right now, pricing gets a little bit better. And I think that's true in Turkey and South Africa and Saudi and every place.
And then on tax rate, maybe give us a sort of current view, particularly with some of your extracurricular activities, how you're thinking about headwinds and tailwinds on that front.
Believe me, I'm not sure they ask my opinion on taxes all that often, maybe other things. But look, I think Keith went through it on the call in terms of how we view 11 and 12, and I think there's no change on that. And then, you know, I just don't know. I mean, I really don't know what's going to happen with deficit discussions and things like that. I think we, like David, like everybody who would be here, would love to see a territorial system just like the rest of the world, and you know, have fewer one-offs, a generally lower corporate tax rate. GE would love that, just like other people would. But I have no idea how that transpires. And in the meantime, you know, the stuff that we care most about in the current forum all runs through 12. Yeah, Dean.
Hey, Jeff, follow up on that last point regarding your new role in Washington. I mean, the initial reaction was the good news is that you had the bandwidth to take on a role like that. But what has been the role? Have you had any issues with conflicts? What's in it for shareholders? And my sense is it's not because you like the ring of Senator Imelt out there, but how you see that over the, you know, the initial reactions.
So, Dean, look, it's a private sector panel. There's 26 members on it, lots of CEOs, people that you would respect, you know, Matt Rose from Burlington Northern, Paul Otellini from Intel, Ellen Kuhlman from DuPont. So, you know, you're with some other big-time players, and our focus really, Dean, is on really job creation. You know, in the short term, how do you create match-up supply and demand? In the medium term, how do you get industries to locate in the U.S. and be competitive, systems of long-term competitiveness, and improve the tone? You know, so I just think I probably spend 2 hours a week on it. You know, I've found it to be manageable. If I didn't find it to be manageable, GE comes first. There's just, you know, I'm a GE man. That's the way I feel about it. But I do think it's important right now that business finds a way to work with government and to try to make the economy better. And that's what the role should be. Yeah.
Yeah, Jeff, if the Fed sees, you know, GE Capital the way you do, you know, how soon after the summer would you start to think about this special dividend, and what would be the primary use by the parent?
You know, I hate to even speculate on that, because we owe it to ourselves, to our investors, and to the Fed to treat the process with great respect and not presuppose. You know, our hope is that, you know, we have, you know, we'll be above 10% Tier 1 capital, well above 10% Tier 1 capital. We'll be above all the Basel III and all those requirements, well above. You know, my hope is that GE Capital pays its fair share of the dividend as time goes on. And then, look, I want to reduce the float. You know, over the next few years, I'd like to get the float back down to where it was pre the offering in 2008. So I just think that's what I'd like to do. But we want to treat the process with full respect. You know, I hate to give you a speculation, but I think a buyback would be a priority, right? Yeah, Martin.
I've got the mic.
Okay, I'm sorry. Sorry. Hi, John.
Hey, John. John Rice's move to Hong Kong seems to have actually really energized a lot of the regions, and for a lot of perhaps different reasons, maybe, you know, decision-making authorities closer or just, you know, more attention or focus. Could you talk a little bit about kind of your own thought process toward, is this a bit of a trial? Is this really an unstoppable trend toward a little bit of decentralization, or perhaps a lot of decentralization of emerging markets? Authority decision-making, and how are you going to benchmark really the factors of success? Because in theory, this could be a big opportunity, right, to get back some of the tailwinds, if you will, in some of these emerging regions.
Look, John, I think the trends in emerging markets are unstoppable. GE has always had a strong access that's product-oriented. That's good for investors over time because, it, you know, these big capital businesses, you want us to make good investment decisions around that. What we wanted to do is have a very strong geographic focus. What I talk about, John, is not decentralization. I talk about repositioning leadership. What we've done with Rice, and behind Rice, guys, we've moved dozens of vice presidents, other big players into the region. I think what you want companies like GE doing is you want them to have repositioned. You know, decentralization to me has a connotation of allowing a low-level person make a big decision, you know, in the spirit of freedom. Repositioning leadership says you have high-level people making intimate decisions because they know the market better than anybody else. And you guys know Rice. You know, Rice, inside our company, speaks big. And so it really has driven a change that I think you'll see. You know, we've never been bad. We've always had good growth. We're very, you know, anytime you do brand studies, GE's in the top five brands in every country around the world. But I just think this is a wave we want to catch, and I want everybody in this room to think this is a definitive GE competitive advantage against anybody else you had pitching up here this week. And in the end, the way you measure that is revenue growth, order growth, market share, stuff like that. And Rice helps us do that. Look, I think, John, you know, we've tested India a freestanding P&L. That's worked spectacularly. Now, I don't know, you know, I'm not sure I would do that model in other places. But I think all of us are in the quest of how do you create a great global company in the 21st century. And GE wants to be that. Yeah.
Jeff? A longer-term question. In the 2007 annual report, there was an extensive section in the chairman's letter positing that GE has built a process to deliver revenue growth of 2 to 3 times GDP growth. And indeed, in the 2003-2008 level, you did do that at 8%. A lot of things have changed since then. The question is the GE portfolio today capable of delivering the aspirations realistically of that were put in that report, namely 2 to 3 times global GDP expansion, or 8+% if you think the world's growing at 4%, 10% EPS growth, and 20% return on invested capital, particularly in light that you now believe GE Capital can only deliver 11 to 15% return on equity.
You know, I'm glad we don't give guidance anymore, Martin. You know, it's just, you know, I don't know quite where to go. You know, I think the safest place for me to go is to give you a couple thoughts on the components, right? I think if you look at service, so if you look at our service business, which is roughly 70% of our industrial earnings, 70 or 80% of our industrial earnings, you know, I think between that and the emerging market total growth, you've got two big chunks of the company that ought to grow 2 times GDP or more. You know, when you think about our service business and our emerging market business, those ought to be able, those are two big engines that are capable of growth. Look, margin rate enhancement's important to you, it's important to me, and we ought to aspire to that. And then I'd say, you know, Martin, if you look at our industrial business, GEX, GE Capital, our return on total capital of the industrial business is probably close to 20%, has stayed there even during the crisis. And we'll just have to see on GE Capital as time goes on. So, you know, those are the pieces, a few pieces to think about. Yeah.
Hey, Jeff, I wonder if you might come back to how you're thinking about normalized earnings power, GE Capital. And after, you know, you get the asset base to where you want it, which looks like end of this year, how you're thinking about normalized growth in pre-provision earnings. Obviously, you've got this framework to keep it as a certain percentage of the company, and I'm just wondering if you, you know, you look at the opportunities for growth in that area, whether you're, you know, you feel like you're going to be constrained in terms of the opportunity set versus the capital available, and how you want to balance that.
So, Terry, what I would say is you got a pretty linear equation for the next few years, right? As you just re-earn the losses to a certain extent, so you got a pretty linear equation there. Then you've got an opportunity to remix the portfolio, basically to higher return as things run off, and so you've got a window that you can see healthy growth just in the current, let's say, strategic footprint. You know, maybe 3-4 years, something like that, where you're going to be able to do that. And if you think out beyond that, look, I think we ought to be really thoughtful about how could you get cash out of GE Capital. How would you redeploy that cash if you could get it out in big lumps? And what's the most investor-friendly way to reallocate that capital? So, you know, I think you've got a window that investors can look at and say, okay, they're gonna re-earn a good ROI. The losses go down. You remix the portfolio. Bad stuff goes out. Better stuff comes in. That gives you a window that you can analyze. And I would say, you know, that's starting to come in focus. And we ought to start be getting some credibility for that, right? And then I think it's all about, you know, cash and capital allocation. You know, we will have great, valuable portfolios that are either good in GE or we can do something with them strategically that would allow us to pump up the industrial business even higher. And look, guys, the P analysis isn't lost on me, right? So I know what's going to put the most food on the table and what rings the bell.
right? But in the near term, if I were an investor, I'd sit here and say, this is a good earnings growth stream that's relatively low risk in the context of, you know, the world today, that GE Capital ought to deliver for the next couple of years. Yeah.
Yeah, you called out wind a few times, and I guess you're saying that next year the margin headwind abates a little bit. On the assumption that pricing stays very difficult, are there things you're doing in terms of thinking about migration of the manufacturing footprint in wind? Also on R&D, I guess you've been behind a bit on large onshore turbines and on offshore. Can you just give us an update on the product pipeline?
You know, what I would say is that our 2.5 is launched and the 1.6 is launched, and a lot of the stuff we're seeing this year was already baked, you know, in the backlog. So a lot of the new business, quite honestly, is outside the United States. And, you know, the margins are, you know, let's put it this way. We take a big hit this year, right, particularly in the first half. And then the margins we see in 12 and beyond, you know, ought to stabilize with that and start growing. So it's kind of in the run rate. And then when we look at a lot of the businesses outside the U.S. today, our cost position and our reliability position is as good or better than anybody in the industry, really. I mean, supply chain has always been a strength, even in that business. And, you know, there'll be another good run for wind turbines. You know, look, I think if you sat back and looked at the U.S., right, someday in the next few years, the U.S. is going to grow again, you know, from a heavy-duty gas turbine or from a power generation standpoint. And when it does, I love having gas and wind. You know, when the U.S. comes back, if you had only two chips to play, those would be the two chips you'd play, and we'll be in good position on both. Yeah.
In that case, I'll take it. There's been a lot of investment in the solar area recently by you guys. Can you comment on that? I know you referenced wind, but this sounds like a much bigger deal for the company than I think it's been historically, or the bets increasing in that area, and why?
You know, again, I think solar, if you look out to the back half of the decade, solar is going to be one of the technologies you have in your portfolio. You know, we actually bought a small startup. We're going to scale it ourselves. We got a thin film efficiency that's as good or better than First Solar today, and we'll just chip away at it over time. But it's one of those that I think is good to have in the portfolio and should be a billion-dollar-plus business for GE looking out. And going this way is a lot more accretive to our investors than going out and buying somebody. So that's how we'll do it.
Great. Thanks.